Welcome to another episode of the Gay Bar Archive Show, where we explore gay history one bar at a time. I'm your host, Art Smith, and today we'll be joined by psychiatrist, philanthropist, and activist, Dr. Jesse Peel. So welcome to the show, Dr. Peel.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's exciting to have you on here because you have a history with Atlanta and with the gay community that goes back almost 50 years.
Yep.
That's pretty impressive. And Atlanta, I know you're from North Carolina originally.
Yes.
But Atlanta was kind of a unique environment in the Deep South because even in the 70s, it had a gay community that was visible and active and had bars and clubs and organizations to belong to.
Well, Atlanta was the place that you moved to if you were a gay boy in anywhere in the Southeast. That Atlanta was the natural place to come to. That same reason I came out when I was in Nashville on faculty at Vanderbilt. And when you start running into your clients coming out of a gay bar as you're going in, maybe it's time to relocate. So Atlanta was the natural choice. It was close enough to be able to visit my folks, but it gave me an opportunity to learn how to be queer.
And I know you were a fan of several of the bars there. At that time, that was a little bit before the explosion of the Midtown bar scene, really. And yeah. It seems like the big bars in Atlanta were more in the kind of Buckhead or Buckhead adjacent areas. Mm-hmm. One of the bars that you mentioned to me that you went to frequently was called Shelley's. What can you tell us about Shelley's?
Well, Shelley's was at the corner of 25th and Peachtree. It was in the first floor of an office building there. Had a nice restaurant, and it was a bar that a friend took me to when I was visiting from Nashville, and I got introduced to Alan Jones and some and his group of friends, and who always gathered there, and on the weekends that was my go-to place.
Now it was located in an office building on the ground floor.
Yeah, 25th and Peachtree.
So that's just a couple of blocks away from where Piedmont Hospital is now.
Well, it's a little bit further than that. It's right after you cross the interstate on Peachtree going north. There's the Masonic Temple, was an apartment building, and then the office building where Shelley's was located.
Now, how did Shelley's compare to other bars that you had been to? I know you mentioned when you were in Nashville that you, of course, had been to the Jungle, which is a tiny bar. And then Warehouse 28, which was Nashville's biggest disco dance bar. But how did Shelley's compare to that? Was it bigger? Was it more extravagant?
It was more intimate. It was a low key kind of place. It was just a neighborhood place where friends met. Usually on weekends, a group of us would get together, and six or eight folks pick a restaurant and go out to dinner. But we would end up at Shelley's before or after or both. And Stevens up the street about a half a mile. I particularly liked it because, and in fact, at one point I was part owner of Shelley's.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Now, Shelley's, what kind of clientele did they typically get? Was it a younger male crowd, or I know at that time when you first went there, you were what, 35-ish?
It was a 30s, 40s crowd. It wasn't a twink bar.
And as so many bars in those days were, it was almost exclusively male. I mean, it was the
Oh,
clientele was by and large very male.
I don't rec there may have been a lady in occasionally, but I don't remember ever seeing one. It was a men's room.
And what kind of entertainment did they have going on there? Did they do drag shows
Oh,
or?
no, there weren't any drag. There wasn't any formal entertainment, no. Just music playing. And like I said, a big part of the business was the restaurant, which was a bit unusual for gay bars at the time.
Yeah, there were a few examples
Yeah.
here and there. I know Dallas had a restaurant, but that was separated from the bar, so
Yeah.
that was a completely different environment. Did you find at Shelley's that you had more of a professional clientele as opposed, I mean, it was people that had professional type jobs or were.
Yes, it was. So I felt I fit right in as a new psychiatrist in town.
So you could go in there and psychoanalyze the clientele while you were having
Oh, hell no, I didn't do it. I left the couch at the office.
a
I was there to connect and to network and hopefully maybe score.
How was the community in Atlanta at that time, in the mid-70s to
What's
late
that?
70s? Was it very cohesive? Did you have a lot of camaraderie with other gay people, or was it pretty splintered and clicky?
I didn't feel it was clicky. There was a lot of entertaining at home, a lot of cocktail parties, dinner parties. It was, at least in the circle I ran in, there was. It was a fellowship of like-minded souls.
And did you find that Stephen's Saloon, which was just down the street from Shelley's, did you find that there was a similar clientele there? Was it the same faces you saw at Shelley's you would see at Stephen's, or was it different?
There was I think Stevens tended to be maybe perhaps a little younger, but not a lot. But it was just a bar.
Right, and it was a freestanding building. It was not.
No, it was a part of. It was in that little strip of shops right across from Uncle Julio's, just before you get to Collier Road at
Oh,
Piedmont
okay.
Hospital. It was on the right-hand side. It was not a freestanding building.
And as far as their kind of amenities and decor and everything, was it at all similar to Shelley's or was it a completely different vibe?
It was just a bar. I don't recall really a whole lot of details about it. It wasn't a very large place. It was just a pub.
Now, I know they also had one in Detroit, right? There was a Stephen's Saloon in Detroit for some reason.
I have no idea whether there was any connection or not.
Yeah, I think there was. I've seen a couple of ads from old publications. You know, I'll similar to Dameron's Guide or other travel guides that listed both locations, which seems odd to me that there would be Detroit and Atlanta seem so disconnected. That
there is a disconnect there.
But Stephen's Saloon was another bar that you seem to enjoy going to. And you also mentioned another bar that was my favorite bar in Atlanta for, you know, everyday type bar going. When I first moved to Atlanta, I moved there about 7 years after you did. So it was 83. And I discovered Far Library, which was also in the ground floor of an office building off of Peachtree Street on Far Road. So it was also in Buckhead.
It was closer to Piedmont.
Yeah. 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 It was up further on.
And it was a much younger crowd there. And it was a dance bar.
Yeah. And they were, amazingly to me, Far Library, I think their slogan in their ads and on their matchbook covers and everything was a literary disco. And the claim to fame in there, as you may recall, was that the entire bar space, the walls were completely covered in bookcases that were full of books. I mean, it was... I'm sorry?
I had forgotten that detail.
Yeah, if you walked around the perimeter of the bar, all the walls, even where the little like seating areas, the little couches and stuff were, behind you on the wall were bookcases full of books, which was kind of a peculiar item for a gay bar.
Yeah.
And what struck me as a little unusual is that even in the early to mid 80s, the Far Library carried with it some sort of unwritten code of decorum. It's like you wouldn't think about walking in there with a pair of torn, shredded jeans and a dirty t-shirt. You almost felt obligated to wear a starched button-down and khakis and loafers and to be slightly dressed up.
It was very much loafers, polo shirt, or like you say, a button-down. But it was again a younger crowd than Shelley's. But I really liked Far Library.
I did too. On maybe Friday or Saturday nights, later in the mid 80s, Backstreet was a big deal for me. But on the weeknights, it seemed like especially Tuesdays, I think it was Tuesdays and Thursdays, they had some sort of like a all-night happy hour or something, and they were always packed. So it was not uncommon at that time, and particularly in my life, I'm not sure about yours, but I used to go out 6 nights a week. It wasn't unheard of to be out at a bar at some point almost every day of the week.
Well, I seldom went out during the week. Mine was mostly on the weekends or visiting the Baz on Monday night, which was dollar night.
But the Far Library was an interesting bar. And what struck me, and as a psychiatrist, you may have a perspective on, you know, where this all comes from, but in the early to mid 80s, being gay was not the easiest thing in the world. You still felt some sort of, you know, distance from the community in general. You felt ostracized a little bit. And the thing that really felt good to me about the Far Library was the fact that it was in a proper business environment. You know, it was not hidden away on a back alley or a gravel road. It was in the ground floor of an office building that anybody might wander into at some point. And when you went there in the evenings and had your cocktails, you were sitting on a patio that was right out on a main street. You were not hidden from society. And to me, that was an important part of my coming out, was knowing that I was worthy of going to a place that did not require me to go down a rabbit hole and go in a back door that had no name on it. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a very comfortable, affirming sort of environment.
And I think we started to see that in the late 70s, early 80s. Once, I guess, the disco era had hit, and there started to be more bigger and more open gay spaces than there were prior to that. Because at least from what I've read and what I've discovered in my research, going back into the 50s, the 60s, the early 70s, a lot of the gay bars were very much, you know, you found out about them by word of mouth or stumbled across them because they were not publicly known. They were clandestine. They were underground, so to speak.
Well, homosexuality was illegal in most locations, and it was still on the DSM as a disorder until the early 70s. And remember, Stonewall was in 69. So we're talking just, and you're talking about comfort levels. The first few pride parades that we had, a lot of guys that marched in those parades had paper sacks over their heads.
Yeah, for fear of being outed, losing their job.
Fear of being recognized, yeah.
Yeah, losing their job or losing their place to live, because it was even illegal at that point.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you could evict somebody for being gay from your, you know, as a landlord. So it was quite a different environment. So at this time, you know, mid-70s into the 80s, you're establishing your psychiatry practice in Atlanta. You're exploring the gay bar scene. And you decided at some point in there to focus the efforts of your psychiatric practice toward the LGBT community and reach out to that community through advertising and word of mouth and so on. Was that a risky maneuver for you? Do you think that there was going to be any kickback or?
Not at all. Like I say, I joined a large psychiatric practice. They were aware that I was gay. In fact, we did a lot of hospital work, and a lot of the times if a gay client came in, they would refer them to me. So I didn't feel any kind of a blowback at all. I was able to take care of clients some of my partners didn't want to deal with.
And I'm sure you could relate to what they were experiencing a lot better because you had either personally or through, you know, friends and acquaintances experienced the same things.
Well, I came out just at the time when being gay was becoming more acceptable. Stonewall was in 69. I came out probably around 72 or 3 while I was still in Nashville. And when I moved to Atlanta, I felt I had something to offer. You know, there were psychiatrists still doing conversion therapy, and I certainly wanted no part of that. And I wanted to be able to share the good news with folks that needed to hear it.
Well, and we're glad you did that, because I can experience from personal experience, I can tell you, I graduated high school in 1977, and I had a boyfriend in high school, and we were both very much closeted. We didn't even know that we were boyfriends, really. We were doing everything that boyfriends would do, but we didn't know that there was a label for it or that there was any hope of a relationship going forward. But we were very close. We were intimate personally and sexually. And I remember when we went off to college, his parents actually sent him to a psychiatrist in Baltimore for that exact reason, because they thought there was something psychologically wrong with him, that he was interested in men. And he was actually counseled by his psychiatrist at that time. So we're talking late 70s. About overcoming homosexuality. So you were kind of one of the people on the forefront before it even became acceptable to do that, to as a medical professional, help people with their homosexuality that did not involve some sort of conversion or, you know, adapting to a heteronormative lifestyle.
Yeah.
So it's, and kudos to the practice that you worked with for acknowledging that and allowing that to be part of, you know, of their practice as well, because, you know, that makes a big difference.
Oh, yeah.
So in the late 70s, you're practicing, in early 80s, you're practicing psychiatry in Atlanta. For a brief time, you were one of the owners of Shelley's, which was a very popular gay bar at that time in Atlanta. And the AIDS crisis kind of starts to impact Atlanta. Now, I moved, as I mentioned, to Atlanta in 1983. And I was aware tangentially of the AIDS situation. But at that time, I thought it was mostly a New York, San Francisco, LA kind of thing.
That's where it's all started.
And as a Southern, you know, living in the South, having lived in Nashville before that and then Atlanta, we didn't really acknowledge the impact of AIDS at that time.
When AIDS Atlanta was organized in December of 1982, and the goal at the time when it was organized was to do some fundraising and send the funds to New York to Gay Men's Health Crisis. They got in touch with the folks back down south and thanked us very much for that offer, but you keep the money in Atlanta, you're going to need it. And indeed, as things rolled in over the next several years, we did. When I went on the board of AIDS Atlanta in 1984, they had a budget of $60,000 a year and 1.5 employees, and it was truly an humble beginning. I did my first fundraiser in July of that year. I went to a couple of my friends. I indicated that a lot of us were doing cocktail parties and regular entertaining. Got their guest list and mine, put it all together, and sent out invitations with the additional caveat that we're going to charge admission. And on a Saturday afternoon, poolside, we raised almost $6,000. And I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah, that was very early for the South to acknowledge, you know, the impact of the AIDS crisis. Was when AIDS Atlanta first opened, were they headquartered on Spring Street? That seems to be my memory for some reason, but
no. They were on Crescent for a while. Then it was West Peachtree.
Oh, West Peachtree.
And after West Peachtree, it was, oh, where do we move to next? I forget what the next location was. But it, I think during the most of the early 80s, it was the West Peachtree location.
Yeah, I think that's what I was thinking of. Somehow I get Spring Street and West Peachtree mixed up in my head.
Yeah.
Especially not having lived there for quite a while. But yeah, I remember going there and getting tested. And the very first time I got tested there, that was in the time frame where there was still anonymous testing. So you used to go in there and they would give you a business card with a number on it. Mm-hmm. And you would do your test and they would tell you to come back 2 weeks later, I think it was, to get your results, because that's how long it took to get the yeah. result. And then you would hand your card to them and they would, you know, put you in a little room with a counselor and tell you what the result was of your test. And they always did it that way because they were concerned, I think, that if it was a positive test result, they wanted to make sure there was somebody there who could kind of talk you down from the cliff, you know, thinking that you might panic.
Well, a positive test at that time was essentially a death sentence.
Right. So I remember going in there and doing that when they still had the anonymous testing. And I remember I was going with, I had a new boyfriend at the time, and we went together. And so since it was anonymous, they gave us each a number. And when we left, we swapped numbers so that, A, neither one of us could lie to the other one about our status. Because we would be getting the other person's status, but also it would kind of soften the blow. If I found out that he was positive, I wouldn't be as devastated at that moment as I probably would have been had it been me. But fortunately, we were both negative and remained that way. So, which is kind of amazing in itself to think that we lived through, you know, 4 decades of since the AIDS epidemic kind of hit, and to still be negative.
Very fortunate.
It is. So you've lived in this Atlanta environment, this practically in the heart of the Atlanta gay environment. Now you're really kind of right in the middle of the action right now, where everything is. How have you seen the community change over the decades that you've been involved with the Atlanta State community?
Well, as you mentioned, Atlanta was the go-to place if you were gay in the Southeast, but we weren't really organized in Atlanta. Atlanta didn't have, we didn't have a functional gay center. There was a gay center, but the only thing they had going was a testing site. There was no clinic. There weren't any organizations really. It was really the epidemic that spurred this city becoming organized as far as the gay community. There were lots of bars, there were a couple of bathhouses, but Atlanta, you came to Atlanta to party, to be anonymous, but activism wasn't a part of the agenda until the epidemic demanded it. Washington, D.C. had Whitman Walker Clinic. That was a gay clinic in New York and in San Francisco and L.A., but not here. So we had a lot of catching up to do. We had to invent everything on our own.
And fortunately, as I said, I moved to Atlanta in the early 80s. So I saw the development of a lot of that, because that's around the time that Atlanta was kind of starting to congeal and starting to have different organizations and different facilities and different activists. And one of the people that immediately comes to mind, and I'm sure you are very, very well acquainted with her, is Dena Collins. Dena was an amazing, amazing part of the community in Atlanta back in the 80s and into the 90s. And I remember that being kind of a turning point for me as well, because I had never known when I lived in Nashville or when I was visiting other cities, I never really knew a lesbian who was such a strong ally and friend of the male gay community. And I think she did just about everything she could ever do to help anyone who was suffering with AIDS or any gay men that were dealing with any other kind of issues at that time.
Our lesbian sisters were enormously helpful in coming and being a part of the response. We also had a lot of straight allies as well. We couldn't have done this by ourselves, but we did a good job of networking. And the women really, they were angels. They were just marvelous in their support of the men.
Now, one thing I have said many times in the course of this this project is that, you know, people want to downplay the role of gay bars and say, well, you know, they cause so many problems and we have thousands and thousands of gay alcoholics because of the bar scene and all that. But what everybody seems to forget is that the bar scene is what made places like Aid Atlanta possible. The fundraising came out of the bar scene largely. The drag queens and the bar owners that supported all these different organizations. It was so important in pulling our community together. Did you see that in Atlanta as well when you were on the board?
Yes, the bars were the community, and every bar had a big fishbowl full of condoms. And bars like the Armory with the Armorettes raised literally hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years in supporting AIDS service organizations, because that's where the community. That was our club. That was our go-to spot, our safe place.
Exactly. Those were our community centers.
And that was also before Grindr and all the other hookup apps. You had to actually meet in person. And it was sort of a profile. You wore a hanky or a keys.
Right.
That was, kids today don't even know what that is.
Yeah, it's hard to explain to some of these people, you know, especially people who are like, say, under 30 or maybe even 40, what it was like when, back in those days, when there were no apps, you couldn't really, it wasn't practical to put a personal ad in a gay publication hoping to meet someone because it was going to take 2 weeks before anybody even saw it, and then how are they going to get back? You know, it wasn't an efficient system. So we came up with all different sorts of ways to
you actually interact. Had to meet and interact person to person, face to face. Imagine that.
Well, one of the first things I remember about Atlanta when I moved there, as far as having a place to meet other gay men, was what is now the conservatory at Piedmont Park. Used to be a semicircular driveway that connected at both ends to Piedmont, and it had a line of picnic tables on one side of the driveway, and people used to go there all hours of the day or night and hang out on those picnic tables and meet. It was a gay cruising place.
Of course it was. I learned how to cruise in Centennial Park and in Nashville, and I just took that talent to Piedmont Park.
I'm familiar with that too. Actually, that was my first public cruising spot. I was a student at Vanderbilt, and somehow I discovered Centennial Park and what they used to call the tea room, the little bathroom that was off to the side.
Over behind the Parthenon.
Yeah. And I thought that was kind of cool for, you know, being a teenager in Nashville, Tennessee, to be able to experience that. And then, of course, when I went to Atlanta, it was on a much larger scale. And the woods at Westminster, right around the corner, God knows what happened in those places. But it just felt like so much more of an accepting environment in general, especially if you were in the Midtown area. You know, you just felt like you could be openly gay and not really have to worry about it, even in the early 80s, which was
Remember your history. Before before this time we're talking about, the hippies had taken over Midtown and were a major presence. So Midtown was already had a bohemian kind of feel. Gay men just moved in and into that environment.
Well, I know as a gay man, in my early 20s when I moved to Atlanta, that it was a huge breath of fresh air. And I cannot say enough about the impact that the bar scene and the Midtown community had on my acceptance of my being gay.
Oh, yeah.
And I know as a medical professional, you've seen this thousands of times, but it's so important to me to be able to accept being gay at that time.
That's where you met. That's where you you found affirmation, and that's where you felt safe.
And I think, you know, and you're welcome to interject your opinion, but I think that's something that we're starting to lose now, because people say, well, I can be gay anywhere. I can go to Applebee's with my boyfriend. But I think the loss of the gay bars that we're starting to experience is going to have some sort of an impact, and it's going to leave a hole.
Well, it's careful what you ask for. For years, we were saying we wanted to be accepted. We wanted to be like everybody else. And now we are. And you see, Midtown isn't the gay Mecca it was. People now are living in Sandy Springs and Cobb County and Gwinnett, all over. And it's no big thing. But what we have lost in that is that sense of community. But that community was also had the qualities of a ghetto as well. So, you know, it's still important that as young men are coming out now, that you really spend some time networking and developing relationships with a new family, people that you can count on, and so that you're not by yourself. The bars really contributed to that, but we have to be a little bit more proactive today in order to ensure that. One of the reasons I started doing my Sunday pool parties 20 years ago was that wanting to have a place where gay men could get together and socialize and fellowship. It wasn't a sex party. That wasn't the goal. It was a place where you could connect. And there are not a whole lot of places as the bars have disappeared, there aren't a lot of places where you can meet up and actually talk to somebody and actually see them.
Right. I remember when I moved to Atlanta, and sometime during the course of the 80s, it seemed like there were, I don't know, probably 30 or more gay bars in Atlanta. I mean, they were everywhere. There were, on Ponce de Leon, you had a whole little cluster of generally kind of seedy, not so pretty bars. You had a strip in Midtown around the Armory, Backstreet, Bulldogs, Gallus, that area. You had more up on Cheshire Bridge Road and, you know, up at Piedmont and Monroe. There were clusters of gay bars everywhere. And now I think, what are you, down to half a dozen or something? There's not that many. I think most of them are right there at Monroe and Piedmont in that one shopping plaza, either Ansley Square or Ansley Mall. I think there's one in Ansley Mall and four in Ansley Square. And that's like the cluster of the gay community in Atlanta now. So do you still do your pool parties?
We'll be opening up sometime in the next few weeks. Yeah, we did, we had a full season last year. You had to show your vaccination card to attend, and we'll do the same thing this year. But yeah.
And they run what, from like May till October or something?
Depending on the weather, yes. But essentially the 1st of May till, usually till about Pride in the fall.
Oh, okay, excellent. Well, if I make it up there for Pride this year, I'm hoping you're going to have a pool party that weekend.
Everybody's doing other Pride events, but we'll be open.
Excellent. So over all these years, you've been involved heavily in the Atlanta gay community, both as a medical professional and as an activist and supporter of Aid Atlanta, as a bar owner. But your involvement extends a lot further than that. And I understand that you recently had a gay student center named after you in North Carolina.
That's right. East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina.
Yes, I was recently schooled about Greenville, North Carolina. I was talking to somebody about a bar that used to be there. And
the Paddock
I was
Club.
What now?
The Paddock Club.
Yes. And I had originally listed it in my records being in Greenville, South Carolina.
No.
Because the ad that I found for it from the whatever it was, the 80s or whatever, the ad that I found for it said so-and-so street, Greenville. It didn't say north of South Carolina, and I never knew that there was a Greenville.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the student center at ECU is interesting because you and no member of your family ever attended ECU.
That's right.
But both you and your mother, from what I've read, have contributed greatly to scholarships and education at ECU because of something that your father once said to you. Is that correct?
No, it was, I grew up just 25 miles from Greenville. So it was right in my own backyard. And when Dad died in 86, I suggested to Mother that we do a scholarship, but he went to NC State, I went to Chapel Hill. Anything we could do in the way of a scholarship wouldn't even make a ripple there.
Right.
And East Carolina was just in the process of establishing their merit scholarship program. And they were encouraging their scholars to be in touch with the donor. And that really appealed to me. And that's how it got started. I'm an only child. We don't have any other I don't have any siblings, so the property we had there, we started make. Mother donated the first couple of farms, and there was a religious studies professor established with that. And then after she died in '05, the university was just rolling out a diversity program. They had hired a vice chancellor for diversity, and they invited me to be a part of that, and it's been quite a trip since then.
Well, we are certainly grateful for your contributions, both in Atlanta and in the Carolinas, to the development of the gay community, and to your involvement with AID Atlanta, and particularly for the purposes of the Gay Bar Couch Project. We're grateful to you for sharing some of your memories with us about the gay bars in Atlanta that you visited when you moved there in late 70s. So thank you so much for your time and for talking to us about these things.
Anything else?
Is there anything else you'd like to add? What would you like to say to the people that are, say, in their 20s or 30s now in the gay community? How can they contribute, and what can they do to kind of put a smile on your face and know that you're leaving our gay world in safe hands?
Well, I think everybody needs to be involved in some sort of way in our community. We tend to isolate ourselves with these, with this modern technology and our smartphones, but you need to get involved with other people, and find something that turns you on, that you can support and give back a part of yourself, because you'll get in return far more than you give yourself. I certainly know I have.
So be present, be involved.
Absolutely.
In person, not virtually. Don't have...
I mean, there's so many places you can volunteer, especially in Atlanta, where there's so many organizations. And it just depends on which one. Right now, I'm much more involved in the arts and in theater than I am in... The AIDS response. I've done that, been there, done that. But go where your heart takes you, and do something that you enjoy. But be willing to give back as well.
Well, thank you. And you have certainly done a great job of that over the nearly 50 years that you've been part of Atlanta's gay community. So we really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Is that it?
That's it.
That concludes another episode of the Gay Bar Archive Show. For more information about this episode or to find more episodes, visit gaybarchives.com.